Hello, and welcome to the Diz Dads Podcast, Midweek Destinations and Diversions Show. It's the Dad Show, your hump day Disney vacation fix, for Wednesday, August 13th, 2014. The Dad Show is brought to you by Kingdom Strollers. Kingdom Strollers is Orlando's premium stroller and crib rental vendor. Why pay more for a less comfortable, less versatile stroller in the theme parks? Make your reservation at kingdomstrollers.com. You'll pay less for the rental, and they'll deliver the stroller of your choice to your resort and pick it up from the resort at the end of your vacation for free. Kingdom Strollers, your first choice for Orlando stroller rentals and an authorized Walt Disney World stroller vendor. Today on the Dad Show, we've got a special treat. We're going to be talking with Kevin Crossman about his family's visit to Disneyland Paris. They spent four days out of a two-week vacation at Disneyland Paris. Welcome back to the show, Kevin.
Bonsoir.
So you had this Paris trip planned, and as I understand, you were telling me before we started recording that the addition or inclusion of Disneyland Paris in this trip was a bit of a surprise.
Yeah, that's right. So my wife and I had done a trip where we went to London and Paris as part of a tour, and then we went to Disneyland Paris for a few days afterwards at the end about 10 years ago. And we basically did the same thing this time with our two sons, who are 16 and 12. And we were on a Globus tour of London, and then Paris was a family trip. And we said, oh, we're going. It's going to be these many days. And we talked about the dates that we were gone. But, you know, kids don't quite look at a calendar and go, that's like 5 days after when you said the tour was supposed to end, when we said we're coming back on the 26th or whatever. And so our youngest was actually kind of had put some little inquiries now and then about, hey, you know, Disneyland Paris is right there. Are we going to go? Oh, no, there's no time, not enough, you know, can't do it this time. And so what we did was one of the things we probably should talk about is how to get to Disneyland Paris if you're in the city of Paris itself, which is probably how a lot of people get there. When my wife and I went last time, we took the metro to a train, and then the train goes all the way out to Disneyland Paris and ends right there, right near there, basically sort of in the center of the whole complex. So it's sort of one way to Disneyland Park, one way to the studios, one way to their Disney Village, which is like their downtown Disney, and beyond. And but then in this case, what we did was we actually took a coach, and this was arranged through the hotel we were staying at. And we kind of felt like it would be a little bit of a more direct route. And by that point in the vacation, we were a little sick of the whole subway system, especially carrying our bags.
Sure.
And so,
sure.
And so the funny thing about it was, so we arranged pick us up at the hotel at 10 o'clock and all this kind of business. But the problem is that I told you about as much French as I know already with the bonsoir.
So the bonsoir is about the end of it.
And so when I booked it, I had said, this is a surprise. And when we met down there, I had my wife and the boys came back a little bit, and I talked to the guy and said, look, these kids don't know where they're going to Disneyland. Can you keep it a surprise? But the problem is that I didn't quite get enough feedback from him that he quite knew that that was what was going on.
Okay.
And then, so we get in the van, and he says, which terminal are you going to? And I'm thinking to myself, well, that's laying on a little thick, but my boys don't know that that's what you should be asking if we're really going to the airport. And so then I thought, well, does he not know that that's where we're going? So I had to write on my phone, Disneyland Paris Sequoia Lodge, just to make sure he knew that's where we're going. And so it was great. It was actually a really nice drive out there through the countryside. And then there were some signs, but there were also signs for the airport as well. But it was a little bit spoiled because new to our trip this time is that they have the Tower of Terror there at the Walt Disney Studios, and we could see it from a long way away. And my boys
up above the countryside there.
Yes, and my boys spotted it. I'm like, look, it's the Tower of Terror, and you know, I think they didn't quite get that. That's really where we're going, even after we sort of turned in to the Disneyland complex. Now, luckily, the signs, they didn't have like the big giant entrance sign like they have at Disney World. But it took them a while, even when we pulled into the hotel, to quite get that, yes, we were going to Disneyland. And the driver was funny. He said, oh, we ran out of gas. We had to stop here. So so anyway, we ended up staying at the Sequoia Lodge, which is one of the hotels that Disney runs there.
Okay. So talk to us a little bit about Sequoia Lodge. You know, compare it to a Disney World or a Disneyland hotel. You know, maybe mix and match if you need to convey it. But
sure. Well, we wanted to stay on Disney property. There are a few outside hotels that run, you know, typical bus shuttles that I'm sure are, you know, like a lot of things, maybe not so expensive. But we wanted to be there, walkable to the parks. And we had stayed at that Sequoia Lodge last time and really liked it. Pretty similar to the Wilderness Lodge at Disney World. Pretty similar to the Grand Californian at Disneyland, although it's more of a moderate in their pricing scheme. They do have some more economy-type hotels that are a little bit more motel-y, and the theming is not as interesting or as elaborate. Uh-huh. And then they have the Disneyland Hotel, which is actually right above the train station at the Disneyland Park, with park, you know, being your room and see inside the park is pretty cool. Very similar to the Grand Californian out in Florida, but that is super, super expensive. And so we went sort of in the middle. And one of the things that we wanted to be here for the Sequoia Lodge was that it has a very relaxing vibe because it's, you know, lots of trees and, you know, little birds chirping and, you know, get away from the parks, get away from, you know, pressures sure. of work life and everything. And it was very, very relaxing.
And like the ones you compared it to, you know, like the Wilderness Lodge or Grand Californian, it's a bit of a sounds like it's a bit of a you know, rural lodge feel.
Yes.
As opposed to, you know, the big city and the you know, hustle and bustle of a theme park.
Yep. Very similar theming to those two hotels. If you sort of put them together, basically you get the Sequoia Lodge. Unfortunately, no big, giant, grand lobby. I know that's important for some people, but it still was very nice.
Okay. So you stayed at the Sequoia Hotel, and what was your access to the parks? Is it, you know, similar to maybe walking across the street from a Good Neighbor Hotel at Disneyland, or is there some other comparison that makes, you know, more sense?
Yeah, so it was about a 10-minute walk, and we walked pretty fast, so it was, you know, a little bit of a hike. And especially, we went in the summer, so it was not cool. So we'll talk about that as part of how we dealt with it. But
sure.
It was about a 15-minute walk, so maybe from a Disneyland perspective, the Paradise Pier Hotel, maybe about that kind of length of walk.
Okay.
But you walk around this lake that they have, where they have three of the hotels that are around this lake with Sequoia Lodge, the Newport Bay, and the New York Hotel. And then you walk through their Disney Village, which is basically their downtown Disney, very small. And then out into the park. So it's at least you're totally in that whole Disney bubble while you're doing that walking.
All right, so that's nice. It's not crossing a city street or any of that. You're,
yes.
You're within the themed environment.
Yep.
And so I assume you spent most of your time in, you know, Disneyland Paris proper, the studio park being obviously, you know, a much smaller park. But kind of where did you start? Did you have kind of an overall plan for, you know, what you wanted really to focus on in the Paris parks?
Yeah, so one of the things that was a surprise when we checked in was they asked about our breakfast time. And in doing all my research and in making all the reservations and everything like that, they didn't talk at all about the fact that breakfast was included at this hotel and for free.
Like, right. It's sort of the standard European board kind of thing.
Yeah, which is actually kind of cool, but it wasn't something we were planning for. So the other thing that you get when you stay at the Disney hotels is you do get the extra magic hours in the Disneyland park 2 hours before park open. So instead of getting in at 10 a.m., you get in at 8, though there are some little big asterisks and caveats with this, but which we'll talk about. So I thought, okay, we're going to want to go to the parks early. We are rope drop people anyway. So I'll have breakfast at 7 a.m., which is right when it starts. So that was part of, you know, this had a ripple effect through the rest of the days.
Sure. But,
so that was the first thing we did. And then, you know, of course, the room wasn't ready because we had arrived early. But then now it's plenty of time to go straight to the parks for fun and excitement. So one of the things we wanted to do right away the first day was kind of get a sense of the parks and really hit a couple of the key attractions that are unique to this particular park. And then we also knew that we were going to be coming in the next day for the extra magic hours. So Fantasyland was not a priority because we figured we'd hit that rope drop the next day, that sort of thing, which is a typical rope drop strategy to do the Fantasyland rides first thing before it gets all crowded.
Sure. And, you know, you had a nice luxury in that you were planning on, you know, 4 full days in the park, which when you really only got, you know, 2 parks there and you got 4 days to experience them, you can, you know, kind of shuffle those priorities a little bit. You don't have to worry about trying to hit everything all at once.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we're Disneyland people, so we're used to the size and the number of attractions and the density of attractions at Disneyland. Whereas this Disneyland park that's in Paris is really a little bit more like akin to the Magic Kingdom in terms of attraction density.
Okay.
We'll kind of talk about that a little bit later. But so there's, you know, I would say 3 days would be plenty for most people if you're, you know, willing to, spend some time in lines and be at the parks pretty much closer to all day than we ended up being for, again, a variety of reasons.
Okay.
But anyway, so the first day we went over to the Disneyland Park and as I have talked about repeatedly on various Diz Dads episodes, the Big Thunder Mountain that is available here is really the best version of this attraction anywhere. It's got some unique elements where the ride itself is out in the middle of this island, and so you actually go under the Rivers of America equivalent to get there, and so it's really exciting. So that was the first thing we did was we went to that ride. We got some fast passes, and in Disneyland Paris, they still use the same old paper type fast passes that they still use at Disneyland. And so, you know, our return time was only about an hour ahead of when we pulled them, which is actually not bad at all.
No, huh?
Their window is a half hour, which is pretty tight. So this was great. So then we ended up going over to the Haunted Mansion, or the Phantom Manor, as they call it there, which is in Frontierland. And we rode that as well. This is, again, got a lot of unique elements and, you know, obviously a highlight of the park. And so we took care of that and, you know, took our time walking around, enjoying the ambiance and everything else. Then our fast passes were ready for Big Thunder. We did that. And then it was time for lunch. And
We get on to lunch,
okay.
Talk to us a little bit about those elements of Phantom Manor that make it unique and different. I mean, one of them obviously, you know, jumps right out at me when you mention that it's in Frontierland. and that's one of the things I think is really interesting about the fact that, you know, all of these Disney parks around the world have haunted mansions, but they're all in different lands.
Yes, absolutely. And in this case, most of the attraction was very, very similar to your Orlando or Disneyland Haunted Mansion. So you had Madame Leota, you had the little hallway with the vines, you had the ballroom scene, you had the bride up in the attic, all that sort of thing. Little differences, and of course the narration in the beginning was all in French, so that was different.
There you go. A way to learn some more French, right? Because it's got to be fairly close to the same spiel.
I suppose. But then, really, when you leave the attic and you go backwards, this is where it is really, really different. And it's sort of like in Pirates of the Caribbean, where you go back in time. It's like you're going below the ground and you're underneath the ground, and it's the Old West. And so you have a lot of skeletons and characters that are supposed to be, you know, from the dead, from the Old West. And so instead of going through the typical graveyard scene, it's, you know, like an old Western town. And they still have the Grim Grinning Ghosts song, but some of the other elements are a little bit different. There's no hitchhiking ghosts, that sort of thing.
Oh, okay. No hitchhiking ghosts. So nobody follows you home?
No.
Okay, interesting.
And but it still is great, and you know the outside of it is to my mind on par with the Disneyland version in terms of its appeal, because it's sort of up on a hill, and it is to me is much more impressive. I've always thought that the Magic Kingdom version is hard to sort of get that perspective, because it doesn't sit up on the hill as much, and you can't see the sort of bottom of it. I don't know.
Right. True.
It's not been my favorite, but anyway, very good attraction, and they have a place you can walk up. At sort of by the exit where you can look at the graveyard and some of the funny stones. And so you have a mix of the typical funny haunted mansion gravestones, as well as some homages to some of the, gravestones from, you know, Tombstone, Arizona, some of those sort of punny, you know, Lester Moore was shot, you know, that sort of thing.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
Anyway.
Good.
So then it was time for lunch.
Yeah, and then talk to us about Parisian lunch in a Disneyland park.
Yeah, so, you know, the food at these parks was very, very similar to what you would get at the American parks. So it was a lot of burgers, it was a lot of pizza, it was a lot of the typical kinds of things you would expect. In fact, if you were trying to find some very French-oriented food, you'd have a hard time finding it, especially in the parks. Now, the one thing that was really interesting from a food perspective was, might as well talk about it now, was the snack options were quite a bit different. So, what's your favorite Disney snack?
Dole Whip.
Not there. What's your second favorite?
Mickey bars.
Not there. What's your third favorite?
Oh, my. Churros.
Not there. What's your fourth favorite? Turkey legs? Nope.
Wow.
So they didn't have any of those famous Disney snacks. Of course, they had popcorn and cotton candy and things like that. Really, the one good snack that was very European specific was they had waffles, and they had these either covered with powdered sugar or with like a chocolate sauce. And
so,
those were
a Europeanized version of funnel cakes.
Kind of like that, yeah. But they were like real waffles, so they're, you know, like good and thick and crunchy and that. And they did have also the sort of European style pancakes as well. We didn't actually try any of those, but those waffles were real good and certainly a nice treat.
Sure.
But we ended up having lunch the first day at their Mexican restaurant, and coming from California, it wasn't awesome.
Mexican food in Paris via yes. Disney.
Yeah, and so like for example, there was a menu item called nachos, and we ordered it, but it didn't come with any cheese on it, which seems
okay.
Like something's missing. Right. Yeah. So, but it was fine. You know, it was all right. Again, typical counter service food, prices at Disneyland Paris were quite expensive, even for counter service, but like a lot of things in Europe were expensive from a food perspective. So in some ways, the sticker shock once we got, you know, having been in Paris and London and Paris for, a week plus, by the time I got to Disney, we weren't having any sticker shock on the price of the meal.
Right. You're kind of used to them by then.
But something to plan for if you're going out there, if you're just going out to Disney.
Sure.
Then we went over to Adventureland, and Adventureland is really, really huge in this park. There's no Jungle Cruise, but it is basically a whole section of this park is devoted to Adventureland, and they have, it's kind of the Tom Sawyer Island on steroids, where instead of having to take a boat to get out there, there's, you know, rope bridges and other sort of natural bridges to get out here. But it's a lot of that same sort of vibe with caves, and, you know, they have the Swiss Family Robinson treehouse still there, which is cool and obviously thematically nice there for people in Europe. And, lots of really elaborate caves with, you know, displays and all kinds of things. And they have a couple attractions. One we went to first was the Indiana Jones ride that they have there, and to get a fast pass. Now, this is not the Indiana Jones that they have at Disneyland. It's really more of a Wild Mouse coaster plus, which includes a little bit of inversion wrapped in a light archaeological theme a la Indiana Jones. So okay. this is not an e-ticket roller coaster by any means, but is certainly nice to be out there. And we actually did have a little bit of an issue here because my 12-year-old, who is short for his age, he is finally got to the point where at Disneyland he is tall enough to ride all of the attractions like California Screamin'. Later on in the trip we did the Rock and Roller Coaster, which is very similar. So, in several inversions, Space Mountain has several inversions. But for some reason, the height requirement on this Indiana Jones ride was too tall for him. And I don't know why, because it didn't seem any more stressful or crazy than any of the other rides that he was plenty tall enough for. But let's just say this was where I didn't do my homework on the attraction height and thus did not set expectations properly. And it was a bummer for him.
Sure.
Yeah, especially when his brother and me rode on the ride.
It reminds me of the issues that people often have at Walt Disney World with Primeval World. Right?
Yes. It's another one that has a pretty high height requirement.
And you look at it and you're like, really? But, yeah, I mean, it's got a height requirement that is, I believe, the same as Rock and Roller Coaster at Walt Disney World.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, it's very high.
So, anyway, okay, so the height requirement was a surprise, and it wasn't even really that intense a coaster, you were saying.
Well, certainly no more than either of those other two. I mean, it was a very typical inversion style coaster where you have the big padding by your head and all that. So it was fun, but it was not too crazy anyway. But it's a good little coaster, and especially when you pull a fast pass, the line is not too long. So we pulled fast passes, we walked through Adventure Island, explored a little bit, and we went over to Pirates of the Caribbean. And, of course, this is a big e-ticket, very similar to the Disneyland version with some of the order of the different scenes. They're in kind of a different order. And no Jack Sparrow. That may be a plus or a minus, depending on your point of view. And there is a restaurant here, which we'll talk about later. So you have a little bit of that Blue Bayou vibe that you get from Disneyland. Okay. And this is a really good version of the ride. We did see several animatronic figures that were in either missing or in disrepair throughout the stay that we had here. But nonetheless, still a very good version. And we did that. Then we went back to Indiana Jones to ride it after our fast passes were ready. And then we went over to the castle. And the Sleeping Beauty Castle here at Disneyland Paris is probably the best-looking Disneyland castle that there is currently at a park that is operating. we'll see what happens with Shanghai. I hear, there's lots of, people saying it's going to be the best one. We'll see. Height and spectacle, very similar to the Cinderella Castle at Magic Kingdom, but it has a lot of European flair and just... Google Sleeping Beauty Castle, and you'll see why it's really impressive. And so we popped around that, looked around. There's like upstairs.
Before we get away from the castle, we have to talk at least a little bit about the dragon.
Yeah, well, that's what I was saying. So there's an upstairs which tells the story of Sleeping Beauty, and then if you go downstairs, there's several ways to get down there with different sort of side entrances. They actually have a dragon down there in the basement, and he's an animatronic dragon who's normally sleeping, but then every so often he gets up, he growls, he moves around a little bit. It's pretty cool to have this dragon underneath the castle, I have to say.
And everything was, working the way it should have, and you got to see him move and all of those things?
Yes. Now, he doesn't breathe fire on you, but other than that, I think it was, I don't know. I guess I wouldn't say I'm a student of the attraction, so if he was supposed to blow smoke and didn't, I didn't notice, but still was impressive nonetheless.
Sure.
So then we went over to Space Mountain and pulled fast passes. And, you know, the park was, you know, this is, you know, by now middle of the afternoon, and it was pretty busy. So we were trying to look for something to do. And, you know, again, this is our first day, so we know we could come back to Star Tours, which was there. The line was too long. And, of course, we'd already pulled a fast pass for Space Mountain. So, you know, we're trying to save our fast passes and all that.
Sure.
So we rode the train. They have a station there in Tomorrowland, or Discoveryland, as it's called. And we did the whole circle tour. And, you know, it's a Disneyland-style train, right? in some cases, not too much to see, but it was a nice little experience. And if you're like the Disney trains, this is just as good. And, you know, got to see a little bit of the backstage areas a little bit. Got to see, you know, the full park.
Sure.
And we came back, Space Mountain Fast Pass is ready to go. We rode it. And this is a really cool version of Space Mountain. As I mentioned earlier, there is an inversion. So you do get a little loop situation. And it's kind of like the Space Mountain you know and love. So it's inside, dark, and space themed with some music. But there is a takeoff sequence where you... it's like you're being shot out of a cannon from the old sort of Jules Verne era idea of shooting rockets. And so you get sort of positioned on this this incline, and it does like a 3-2-1 or whatever, and then you shoot up this hill, and it is very, very exciting. So if you like that takeoff that you get on Rock and Roller Coaster or California Screamin', it's kind of similar to that, except you're going up. And then you go down into the darkness, and it's really, really cool.
Okay, so it's that same sort of, what do they call it, linear...
yes, linear acceleration.
With the magnets.
Yes. Now, the interesting thing for us is that we, for years, have been trying to get our 16-year-old to go on some of these... bigger coasters, and he's always said he doesn't like it, or he doesn't want to go on the loops or whatever, but he did go on this one, and it was really, really interesting, because even though he's going through a corkscrew or whatever in the ride, and he just was screaming his head off with joy, and this is so awesome, that sort of thing. And so it was really, really interesting to see him come out of his shell a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
On this trip, and he did the same thing with Rock and Roller Coaster at the other park. So let's see when we go back to Disneyland if we can get him on California Screamin' now.
Sure, sure. So, a little different feel being outdoors and in the open as opposed to, you know, indoors in the dark.
Yes, exactly. So we rode Space Mountain, and then getting pretty tired by this point, and we didn't want to burn ourselves out, and it was, you know, getting towards dinner time, so we went through the walkthrough of the Nautilus. And again, this Discoveryland has got this very Jules Verne-y style theme to it. You know, the tomorrow of yesterday or whatever.
It is. The steampunk future that never was.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, I know that both Disneyland and Magic Kingdom have tried to borrow elements of that, but they haven't really committed to that theme as much as this park has. And for better or for worse, it certainly seems better executed. There's an eatery which has the same theme, and all the landscaping and, you know, the Astro Orbiter, all that sort of stuff is very much like this. And they have this Nautilus that's sitting in a lake, and then there's a way you can go through into it. So if you like little walkthrough attractions of the Nautilus, you know, it's good for a little quick walkthrough.
Okay.
And then that was the end of the day. We were tired. We wanted to go back to the room. You know, nothing special for dinner. You know, we wanted to get up early the next morning for our rope drop.
Right. You had rope drop, and you had that 7 a.m. bright and early breakfast.
Yeah. So next day we got up early. I'm always like a breakfast person at a hotel like this. I have to have coffee, and if there's a situation where I can get a croissant or whatever, I will always take that opportunity. My wife's sort of in, you know, she can take it or leave it, and then the boys are happy with Pop-Tarts, and so that's kind of how it worked out this first day. Where my wife and I went down there, and right at 7 o'clock, we were bright and early. It's interesting that they have two restaurants at this the Sequoia Lodge. One is a buffet and one is a regular sit down. And then they have a bar area, and they were also serving breakfast in this area too. So it was actually convenient for us to just go right there.
Sure.
And you know, it was not a lot of hot food, but again, pretty good spread of pastries and cheeses and yogurts and croissants and all that sort of stuff.
Well, you know, you were on the continent from which yeah. the whole continental breakfast concept comes, right?
Indeed. And but then, of course, this affords us to go to the park first thing at rope drop. And so Extra Magic Hour start, and we as we're getting closer and closer to the park, we're expecting to see, and we were getting there, arriving maybe 5 minutes before 8. So we were actually a little behind schedule where we wanted to be.
Sure.
Because we know that at the American parks, if you get there 5 minutes before rope drop, you're behind a whole bunch of people.
Right.
No matter when these extra magic hours start. But we kept walking through, and we didn't see a lot of people. And we were like, are we missing something? And we got through, and there was one other family there, you know, at the turnstile. So, you know, of course, we were first through our turnstile, and we were literally the first people to walk through Town Square, first people to walk down Main Street, the first people to see the castle. And this was a cloudy day, so it definitely had this sort of, I can tell there's something, but I'm not sure what, off the distance. And it was pretty cool to walk through there with literally nobody else walking wow. through. There was like a dad and his son, and that was it.
So the lesson is that the Europeans don't do rope drop.
Well, there's a reason they don't do rope drop, which we'll talk about.
Okay.
So of course, we did our usual prioritization through the Fantasyland attractions. And, of course, you know, some of these are fast pass attractions, but you don't get fast pass until the regular park opening.
Sure,
so
sure.
We went through and we did Peter Pan, which is great. Dumbo. We did the teacups. We did the carousel. Which is also nice. But then we started running out of Fantasyland attractions to go on because they only open, only part of them.
Oh.
Which it would not be so bad if it opened at 9 and then the rest of the park opened at 10. But we got there at 8.
Right.
So by about 8:45, we're like, what are we going to do for the next hour and 15 minutes?
So they give you more time but fewer attractions.
Yes. So we went through the castle again, and then we went over to Buzz Lightyear, which is very similar to the Disneyland version, over in Tomorrowland. So it's like that ride was open, Astro Orbiter I think was open, and Space Mountain was open, but no Star Tours. Some of the other things weren't open, so it was sort of a bummer, to be honest with you, because when you think you're paying for extra magic hours, and you go through the 6 attractions that you can go through, you know, and you have all this time afterwards. And a lot of the stores and restaurants and, you know, snack places were not open either. So it wasn't like we could spend a lot of time, you know, on Main Street. There was like one bakery that was open and, you know, it's like there was really not a lot to do. It was kind of disappointing. And so then, of course, the problem is for the rest of the day, we were sort of stuck with this 7 a.m. breakfast time, and we weren't going to the parks that early either. And then the other thing, too, is that they say that some of these attractions open at 10 a.m., you know, the rest of the Fantasyland attractions. So, okay, fine, except that some of them do open a little bit early, which is, you know, like, is it going to open early? Is it not going to open early?
Oh, so you have to just kind of stalk them.
Yes, exactly. So they have a nice section in the back of their Fantasyland where they have the Casey Jr. Train, and it's a little bit more exciting than the Disneyland version. And then they have a version of Storybook Land. There's a French name, but I don't want to butcher it. But it's the same thing. But the nice thing about this is that the boats work on kind of one of those roundabout things, like they have at Cali River Rapids where you can just sort of step into it.
Oh, sure.
So it's super easy to get in and out. And there's no narration, but there's like little signs around for the different Storybook Land type attractions. So, you know, you can see miniature castle, and then they had a little Tangled tower, and, you know, all those sorts of things. Very nice, very well kept, very elaborate. And the Casey Jr. train is just very similar. So you have the caged monkey, the monkey cages, and all that other stuff. That are there. And again, it's very, very nice to go through there. Now, it was funny. We went back to Casey Jr. Later in our trip, and there was a little kid. He must have been about, I don't know, maybe two and a half, and he was there with his parents, his mom and dad.
Okay.
And remember we were talking about the on the train show, we talked about how there's this sort of visceral appeal of being in the monkey cage on the Casey Jr. train.
Right.
And so what happened was is that his family was assigned to the back train, which was just a normal sit in a row type of train. Right. And his parents were definitely not holding on to him. So when the gates opened, he bolted for that monkey cage, which was like in the next row over, which in theory he's not supposed to go to, but right. He's 2 and a half, he doesn't know the difference. And because the parents weren't holding his hand and they weren't paying attention, he got into the monkey cage. And when they started to pull him out, he did not like that. And so...
none of that.
And so the cast member was cool about the whole thing. Like, okay, we'll get you into the next one. They got him out. They told him that he'd be in the next one. And then he got to ride the monkey cage. So I'm telling you, that universal appeal of the monkey cages is definitely a real thing.
It knows no national borders.
Yep. So then we also rode their Small World, which is very nice. We went over to Discoveryland, I should say, to ride Astro Orbiter, to ride their Star Tours, which is the old Star Tours.
So how is the old Star Tours holding up in Disneyland Paris?
Well, I got to tell you, I've been on the new Star Tours a whole bunch of times, and the old Star Tours is looking pretty old. And it's really a testament to the new version of Star Tours to ride the old one and really see how much better the synchronization between the movement and the film is, and obviously the quality of the film, the quality of the experiences that you have in the ride, and you know the randomization, the elements like the Rebel Spy that are really kind of pumping the volume from an interest and excitement standpoint, all not present in this. And so we wrote it the one time, and we thought, yeah. That's about all we need to do.
Little nostalgic experience, and we can say we did it.
Yep. So, you know, this was a good full morning, and I think we'd gotten some snacks or whatever a little bit of the way through there. But it was getting close to lunchtime. And so one of the things that's really nice now that our boys are older is that, and they like to, you know, do their own thing. And, you know, it's nice for us to let them do their own thing. And they stay together. They're very well behaved. They've been in Disney parks their entire lives. So there's no problem for them misbehaving or whatever.
Right, sure.
And so we decided to split up for lunch and then meet back, you know, later in the day. And so we gave them 20 euros or whatever to go have lunch wherever they want and do whatever they wanted to do. They ended up going to Space Mountain and doing a pizza lunch and, you know, doing their thing. But my wife and I went to the Blue Lagoon restaurant. And again, this is the restaurant that's in the Pirates of the Caribbean attraction and is one of their signature, you know, 3 euro restaurants. And it was, you know, quite a not a cheap lunch. But we did do it right. We thought, well, if we're in, we're going to be in all the way. So we got pina coladas, and we ordered the coconut shrimp as an appetizer, and then we had our entrees, and then we had the coconut souffle dessert, whatever. I mean, we went all in on this.
Sure, you might as well.
And the funny thing about it was we just did a walk up right when they opened at I think 11:30. Okay. And there wasn't anybody there really, so we thought, well, we don't have a reservation. I'm sure that they probably want people to keep, you know, have reservations. I'm sure that depending on the time of the day or time of year, you might actually require a reservation. But we thought, you know, you're opening first thing, they can probably get us in here. There's only two of us, and so it was actually no problem. And as we got seated, it was nice. They seated us right down by the edge of the water, so we could see all the boats going by for Pirates of the Caribbean. And as we sat down, we said to each other, you know, it'd be funny if the boys came by in a Pirates of the Caribbean boat, because we knew that they were doing their own thing, and right. They mentioned something about maybe going on pirates. And I'll tell you, not more than a minute later, around the corner, the boat comes, and there they are, you know, waving at us, and we're waving back. So it was pretty cool.
Fun.
For them and for us, too.
Great.
So if you're looking for a signature dining, I would recommend the Blue Lagoon. It's definitely, you're going to want to go there and eat, and you will spend some money, but it is a really nice atmosphere, and the food was really good too. Disney has kind of a dining plan that we didn't participate in throughout their resort. And so there are certain menu items that are part of the, you know, you can pick as this is part of the dining plan or not. So, you know, do your homework ahead of time if you're a picky eater, and especially if you're going to be on the dining plan, make sure you understand what you can or cannot have as part of that dining plan.
So it's a little bit more limited than the, you know, dining plan that we're used to using it at Walt Disney World. You know, there are obviously always a few things that are excluded, but, you know, the menu tends to include most things on the plan.
Yeah, this was more like 40%. You know, maybe there was 10 or 8 entrees and you got 4 of them or something in that range.
Right. So maybe a little bit like the, you know, prefix World of Color lunch options or dinner options where there's a subset of the menu that is included.
Sure, sure. So, but it was a great lunch, and it was in the air conditioning, and the heat was definitely an issue for us. We're not used to humidity, and so while it was not, you know, too hot, I mean, it's upper 80s, it definitely was draining on us, and especially because we had been through, you know, a week and a half of heat in London and Paris, and I had done a bunch of walking around in London and Paris as well. So, you know, we ended up, you know, we did a little bit of, you know, shopping and stuff after the lunch. My wife did some shopping. I went through the Swiss tree house, that sort of thing. But we ended up then just going back to the hotel. And again, so, you know, this is an example of where we were pacing ourselves and or we didn't feel like we had to kill ourselves to see every possible attraction. But we left a lot of sort of time on the table, so to speak.
Sure, sure.
On both of these days. And, you know, we haven't talked about any nighttime stuff yet, which we will know in a minute.
Okay.
So one of the things that was an issue for us at the hotel was that we wanted to use the swimming pool. And the Sequoia Lodge swimming pool is a really, really nice one, and it's got a nice slide, and it has an indoor portion and an outdoor portion, which you can sort of swim through the gate there. Uh-huh. And my son and I got all ready to go for the swimming pool, and we walked out to where the swimming pool was, and it was closed. Really? And it looked like they were doing some sort of repairs, and all this, and I knew because I had been listening, you know, paying attention to some internet things, that the pool at the Newport place was under construction as well because they're doing a major refurbishment.
Okay.
So I knew that that pool was down, and so I thought, well, this is crazy. And so it must have been some sort of, I don't know, unexpected malfunction or something that required them to close.
It would be unusual to take 2 of the 3 pools around that lake down at the same time.
Exactly, in the middle of summer.
Yeah.
During their high season. So we checked at the desk. Yes, we can use the pool over at the New York Hotel. So we went over there. And it was, you know, it's not too long of a walk to go over there. But the pool is not nice, is nicely themed. And for my taste, the water was too cold. So, but my son loved it. We went over there the next day. So he, you know, we got our value in terms of the pools and whatnot. They do use a locker system there, which was sort of a pain. So you can't just like walk up, take your shoes off, jump in the pool. You have to like storm in a locker, and the instructions were not very clear, and they were sort of in French, and, you know, anyway, it was
a little extra headache that you weren't looking forward to when you went to relax at the pool.
Somebody was a little rude with the help that day, let's just say. So anyway, not my finest hour.
Okay.
But I was frustrated and hot. So anyway, we ate one night at the Rainforest Cafe in the Disney Village, and it was, guess what? A Rainforest Cafe. It was a pretty standard Rainforest Cafe.
Okay.
We also ate at basically a counter service pizza place, which was, again, not awesome, but was quite a bit cheaper than a lot of the other restaurants that were there, and we were looking to spend not so much money. So
sure.
We did
and
not eat high on the
It can't be worse than Walt Disney World counter service pizza, so.
Yeah, it actually was.
Ouch.
You know, like, you know, I'm a big Animal Kingdom fan, and I think that Pizza Safari Pizza's not bad. That was good.
Okay.
You know, not awesome, but, you know, right, in that range, this was way below that. So, you know, set your expectations accordingly.
Okay.
But anyway, so that was our Wednesday. And then Thursday, we decided to make this to be our day to go see the Walt Disney Studios. And like Disney California Adventure before they did all the upgrades, and like Disney's Hollywood Studios, you know, this is your poor man's park. It has got that Hollywood movie theme. So it's very similar to the studios in a lot of ways, not just because they have a lot of similar attractions like Tower of Terror and the Rock and Roller Coaster. But they've made a bunch of improvements. And from the time that we were there 10 years ago, they've added the Tower of Terror. They've added a Toy Story Playland, which is like a mini land around Toy Story, similar to the one they have in Hong Kong. Uh-huh. So there's three sort of off-the-shelf but elaborately themed for Toy Story attractions. They've added Crush's Coaster, which is a pretty similar to Primeval World. So it's that sort of coaster where you're spinning and moving around and stuff.
Okay.
And then they've the big e-ticket that they've just opened is the Ratatouille ride. And
yeah, I was looking forward to hearing about that one.
And so this is, this whole sort of French area is its own mini land. I think that this seems to be a template that's starting to use a lot more now, you know, with Cars Land and some of the other things they've done, where it's its own little, very highly themed land with maybe one attraction, like in this case, or maybe a few, but not the old style lands where there's an expectation you're going to have dozens of attractions or several at least.
Right.
So this park opens at 10 a.m. and we got there a little before 10 and it was chaos. There was all kinds of people. And it turns out what happened is this is something, maybe if this will help somebody, because I was not aware of this, but
okay. They
basically opened the gates at 9:30. They have some sort of table where they're handing out fast passes for the Ratatouille ride at that time. So, you know, between 9:30 and 10, the fast passes for Ratatouille between, you know, park open or whatever until about 12:30 are taken care of and gone, like right up there in the front of the park.
Interesting.
And they
almost
have two,
like, almost like you know, Jedi training sign up at Disney World, you know, where
yes.
they start taking those right away.
Yes. And if you don't know what you're doing, you're going to miss out that day.
Right.
And so it was a little unclear what this giant line was or that giant line was. And one of them was to get into Crush's Coaster, and the other one was to get into the Ratatouille area. And, you know, so line management could have been better for sure. But even at 10 a.m., it was already really, really hot. And again, we did not deal well, and especially my wife was not dealing well with the heat that day. And so we ended up going for the Ratatouille ride. And it was really interesting because what they did was they had people lined up, and the line, especially compared to some places we were in Europe where there were line cutting and all these sorts of issues.
Right.
People were in a pretty orderly line, and Disney had ropes up and things like that. So 10 o'clock rolls around. What would you expect to happen? You expect, okay, now this line's going to start walking towards the Ratatouille ride, and we're all going to get into the queue and be ready to go. No. What they do is they let 20 people go and stop, and 20 people to go and stop.
Interesting.
And it was kind of a pain. So by the time we actually got up there, the standby line was 70 minutes, but the single rider line was 5 minutes.
Wow.
And so we decided to take the single rider. And like a lot of the single riders that you have now with Test Track and Radiator Springs, you know, you should not expect you will stay together. You probably will be in separate cars, all that
sort
of business.
Same morning.
Turns out my 16-year-old and I we ended up being together, but the rest of us were separate. Okay. I'll tell you, this Ratatouille ride is really, really good. It's like a dark ride, so you're in like a car that's sort of like a two-level Omnimover. It's kind of like the Winnie the Pooh ride. So there's one row and there's another row.
Okay.
So
the base car accommodates four people comfortably.
Right, right. And with the row in the back a little elevated so you can see over the people in front of you.
Okay.
And it's like it's a mouse. But it's a trackless system. And so the cars do not have to follow each other in a specific order. One can stop and move over to the right, and the guy behind you can pass or go around on the left. And there were parts during this ride where you were in this group of three, but sometimes you were in the front and sometimes you were in the back, depending on how things moved around. And it's basically like you're a rat going through some of the scenes in the Ratatouille movie. So you're going through the kitchen and they're chasing you and there's people going around, and then you go out into the restaurant underneath, you know, like a dining cart, that sort of thing.
Uh-huh. Well, and that whole trackless system really adds to that. Sounds like it adds to that sense of sort of chaos and, you know, shuffling around and scrambling for, when you're being chased and that kind of thing.
Right, exactly. And it's a 3D movie, and so it's sort of like I think it's sort of like the Spider-Man movie at Universal Studios, where you move through a real environment and then you come up upon a screen, and because you have the 3D glasses, it looks very realistic. And there is some motion simulator things happening, so it looks like you're maybe falling into the kitchen from high up above.
Okay.
And it is completely seamless, and it is really, really good. Sound is great. There's some like heating effects and some other environmental effects, water, that sort of thing. And just really, really thrilling, but totally appropriate for, anyone in the family. There's no height requirement. There's a few little jumpy things, but very tame from a jumpy effect standpoint. Nothing like Tough to Be a Bug or some of the more thrilling attractions. And I'm telling you, if they put this attraction in France at Epcot, the line would be, out to Future World.
Oh, wow.
It is such a good attraction. But Disneyland Paris has a 4 or 5 year exclusive for this attraction. So
interesting.
It will not be coming to a theme park near you anytime soon. And, if you're on the fence about going to Disneyland Paris and you're a Disney attraction nut and you want to ride these really, really cool attractions that you have never had, this is definitely one of them. And, definitely a top 10 attraction worldwide. And I've been to all the, U.S. and Disneyland Paris theme parks. Really, really good.
Well, and, I'm glad you say that, because when I talk to people who are considering Disneyland Paris, a lot of them really question the value of going to the Studios park. It gets a bad rap in a lot of the online forums. It is a smaller park. There seem to be fewer attractions. And, there are a lot of people who say, well, I can do Disneyland Paris in one day. Or I don't need to get, the park operator. I don't need to go a second day because I can be content just doing Disneyland Paris.
And yeah, so this is, to me, this is very equivalent to the Harry Potter at Islands of Adventure, right? A lot of people would never go to Islands of Adventure. They'd only go to Universal Studios. But when they put the Harry Potter in there, okay, if I'm only going to go one day and I want to go to both parks, I will pay the extra price for the park hopper just so I can experience this thing at this other park.
Okay.
And this Ratatouille ride definitely would be equivalent to that. It is definitely worth the price of admission, over and above. Now, this Walt Disney Studios park is not an awesome park. The sort of movie set theme to me doesn't work. And if you've been to Disney California Adventure since the redo, you'll understand why this, a more traditional theme park theme works much better than the studio's theme.
Right.
There are some nice attractions there. So we went through the Toy Story Land, and the lines were kind of long and, again, hot. They have like a sort of a roller coaster that goes, it's like a Hot Wheels car that goes up and down this track. So, it's not too bad, but we did ride the little Slinky roller coaster, which was just basically a coaster that goes around in a circle. It's not awesome. We went on Rock and Roller Coaster, which is basically similar to the one in Orlando, but the pre-show movie is different. But, same thing, loops and loud music and Aerosmith throughout the ride. Still really, really good. They have an Armageddon. It's sort of like a special effects show. So they talk about special effects in the movies, and then they talk about how they did the special effects in Armageddon. And it was funny, actually, when we went through the Rock and Roller Coaster, they had the guys from Aerosmith. And I said to my wife, what would happen if one of the guys from Aerosmith died? Would they still have the movie? You know, or would they sort of paint him out of the scene there? Unless it's Steven Tyler, he's the only one who speaks. You know, they could just paint out the drummer, and you know, who would know?
Nobody would know.
But then we could go to the Armageddon, which is right next to it. And as part of this attraction, you have this filmed movie segment with Michael Clark Duncan from Armageddon explaining things about when I was on the set and blah, blah, blah. Of course, Michael Clark Duncan is now deceased. And I guess I got my answer, which is they wouldn't do a damn thing. It's a tribute to him.
Yeah, of course.
So, you know, you get into this room and they have some like physical effects and fire effects, and it was all right.
Okay.
Then we did the Stitch attraction. This is like Turtle Talk, except you're talking to Stitch. It was all right.
Which is interesting because that's the way that I wonder if it's the same film, because they do something very similar in the Kids Club on the Disney Dream, or I'm sorry, on the Fantasy.
Pretty likely. I mean, and this was one of the few attractions where there was a French line and an English line. So, you know, we were lucky. We got right into the English thing. We, you know, they were closing the gates and they, you know, pushed us on through. So we got lucky. Didn't have to wait. It was okay. We had lunch at their counter service. It was burgers and sandwiches and nothing special. You know, movie set theme. So we were in the Pirates of the Caribbean section with little movie props and all that sort of thing. It was all right. We went over back to the Ratatouille ride to pull our fast passes. So remember I said that they stopped selling fast passes. They said, come back at 12:30 and you can get fast passes for later.
Right.
So we hightailed it over there, got our fast passes for later in the afternoon, and then we bailed.
Right. And so, take a break until you can come back and use those fast passes, basically.
So, yeah. So, it actually turned out, I'm trying to remember exactly the sequence here, but I think everyone else was so pooped from the heat. I actually did the Ratatouille ride myself, and I came back to the park just to do it. So, you know, got all hot and sweaty walking over back to the park. I had four fast passes, but because it's only a half hour window, I knew I couldn't do more than two,
right.
You know, in that section. So I ended up giving two of my fast passes away, and which was nice. But I rode it two more times, still great. You know, it's just a great attraction. And then I did their Cinemagique attraction. Now, this is a film that has some other sort of Disney special effects going on in it. And it's supposed to teach you about the history of movies. And it serves a very similar role to the Great Movie Ride at the Disney Hollywood Studios.
Okay.
But I would argue it does a much better job because it is, it contains a lot more similar, more recent films that people are familiar with in some of its sequences. So there's like, there's a sequence that involves the movie Titanic. There's a kissing sequence that includes newer films like Ratatouille. Just a lot of sequences that are much more contemporary than a lot of the really old, really, really old movies that are in Great Movie Ride. And again, I don't want to spoil the special effect that goes on in this attraction, but it is really, really good. And it features Martin Short and Julie Delpy as part of this film.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, my big criticism of Great Movie Ride really is always, it doesn't bother me so much that it's, you know, so many older films, but it just seems to me to be really poorly organized to, you know, be telling the story of the history and development of motion picture. It just doesn't do it for me.
Well, then you would love the Cinemagique because it does more of a chronological movement through, you know, silent films and into westerns and all that sort of thing.
Okay,
so,
great.
Then we went over to Disneyland Paris for dinner. Colonel Hoffie's is a counter service there in Adventureland, which was great. We went through to do the Haunted Mansion again. We went and did the riverboat, which is very nice there. Not a lot to see on the shores or anything like that, but, you know, it's a riverboat. It's a riverboat. It's cool.
We did now, do you have a view of Big Thunder Mountain from the riverboat?
Yeah, so that is the one nice thing, is that you go basically around this island where the Big Thunder Mountain takes place, and you do get some nice views of the Phantom Manor as well. It looks like they have an area that looks like geysers, and I suspect that in the old days, those geysers used to erupt okay. when we were there. We went back and did Pirates again. We went over to Fantasyland. The short lines for Pinocchio and the Snow White dark rides, very similar to the equivalent rides in Disneyland. And then we wanted to go and wait for their nighttime spectacular, which is called Dreams. And this is your it's sort of a mix of Fantasmic and the castle show with the projection effects and fire and World of Color style mist curtains and projections on the fountains and things like that. So they basically put all the elements for all these different nighttime shows throughout the world into one show on this castle show. And it's the best castle show I've seen. And it's getting rave reviews. So, again, well worth the price of admission
okay.
to go and do this.
Anything special to get a good view of it?
Yeah, so I would say we were on the Discoveryland side, and some of the elements would probably play better on the Frontierland side of the castle, if you can do it. And the one thing that was really interesting was, you know, like around the hub, there are these little areas that are fenced off with grass, and there's planters or little hills of landscape and things like that. And if you've ever been walking through there and thought, you know, wouldn't it be great if I could just lay down on that sort of incline on that lawn to watch the castle show? But I know I shouldn't do that because that's why Disney puts a little fence around it.
Uh-huh.
Well, fear not, because if you go to Disneyland Paris, you can do this anytime you want, and none of the cast members will complain because people are doing this throughout this day. I found it to be very disrespectful myself, but maybe that's through my lens about right. Disney
well,
stuff.
Sort of the opposite of the you know, feedback we've heard from people who have visited you know, Tokyo, where you know, seems that the guests seem to go out of their way to be more polite than the cast members would ever ask them to be.
Right, right. So, and on that note, they have, like, the American parks designated smoking areas. I think I saw one guy in a designated smoking area the entire time, but I saw plenty of people smoking.
So more of a suggestion there, really, than a requirement.
And we're not smoking people, so it was annoying to us.
Yes.
But anyway, that was a great way to end the park. You know, a lot of waiting around for it to happen, but just like any park. And, you know, for us, it was interesting because it didn't really get really, really dark until close to 11 o'clock when that park closed, and that's when the Dream Show was on.
Oh, wow.
So it is a much later sunset. So that's why it is so late at that park. So then Friday was our last day, and it was time to catch up on some things. We went and did Big Thunder again, Casey Jr. again, Pirates again. We got some Big Thunder fast passes. We had lunch. We went to Peter Pan again, and you know, with a fast pass.
Sure.
We went over to the studios to pull fast passes for the Ratatouille ride again. I took the rest of my family over to see Cinemagique. Then we bailed. Again, it was hot, and our fast passes were for way later. So then, again, the boys were just pooped, and they're sort of like, once you get them back to the room, they're sort of done for the day.
Right,
but my wife and I wanted to go back to do the Ratatouille ride. So we went back over there right when our fast pass window was supposed to take place, and the ride was down.
Oh.
So we thought, okay, well, we'll come back. The park, this Disney Studios park, closes at 10, or so we thought. So there's plenty of time. And we went back to the Disney Village. We had lunch at Earl of Sandwich. So that's always a popular attraction for some folks. It was pretty good there, too. Then we went back. We did the little magic carpets of Aladdin, which is there at the studios. And then So we actually did that right when we entered. But then we went back to go to the studios at 9 o'clock. Plenty of time because it closes at 10. Well, actually closes at 9. And so the 24-hour time clock did us in because we're not used to it. So 2100 is not 10
o'clock.
Keep
doing the math.
It's 9 o'clock, not 10 o'clock. So we didn't get to go on it again, which was too bad. But, you know, it's a new ride. It's going to go down from time to time. It is what it is.
Sure.
So, and along the way, we did plenty of shopping. We experienced beer in a Magic Kingdom-style park, which was always fun. They have some nice arcades on the side of Main Street, so you can walk down the center of Main Street, or you can go in these arcades, which are on the side, which have sort of entrances into the various stores and whatnot, and also some sort of Victorian-era displays.
Interesting.
And so they're, you know, they have a map of what they thought San Francisco would look like in the year 2000 from back, you know, turn of the century type thing.
Right. So people understand when you say an arcade, we're talking about what are essentially sort of what's another word for them so people understand. We're not talking about, you know, places full of video games.
No, it's like a big hallway.
Yeah, like an outdoor hallway almost, although they're usually covered.
Right, they are indoors.
So the kind of like what the Emporium would be like if they hadn't filled in all the connecting spaces with more shelves.
Yes, something like that. Yes.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So I was going to say, overall, it was a great time. Again, you know, we had lots of downtime here, and that was sort of part of the plan, going back to the pool, enjoying the air conditioning. I spent part of an afternoon sitting in the bar with a beer and, you know, catching up on some reading. And, you know, that was the whole reason we were doing that. And, you know, it's not the best investment of time at a Disney park, but that was part of what we wanted to do, and that's why we were staying there for those many days. Again, two full days if you got their park open and you were really smart about fast passes, you could definitely do basically everything you wanted to do in 2 days if you were willing to, you know, stand in some standby lines. We weren't, but 2 days you could do it. 3 days we give you lots of elbow room.
Okay. So looking back, I mean, you had this nice kind of leisurely time to experience the parks. If you had to pick maybe, let's do this a couple of different ways. If you could pick one themed area that you really enjoyed, that stood out to you, what would have been your favorite themed area?
Well, I'm always a fan of the Adventureland or those sorts of jungle environments, but I would say this is a really, really cool Adventureland that they have here. Again, it feels very organic. The restaurant that we went to was very well themed for sort of the idea of explorers and that sort of idea. Some nice attractions, some nice wandering around places here. There's a pirate ship you can go on and kind of explore a little bit. Peter Pan's or Captain Hook's pirate ship. They do some meet and greets with the Peter Pan characters in Adventureland. It sort of actually borders right on Adventureland and Fantasyland near where the Peter Pan ride is, so it actually sort of thematically
nice
similar
trail
here. Yeah. So I would say the Adventureland was really my favorite.
Okay. And we talked a little bit about, you know, some specific restaurant stuff. Other than Blue Lagoon, did anything stand out to you, you know, on either end as, you know, especially good or really just skip it?
I would say the Mexican restaurant was probably more of a skip it. We actually tried to go to, there was like a barbecue place in Frontierland that was closed. And it seems like some of the restaurants close at weird times I think there was one night we were trying to eat dinner at the studios at 6 o'clock, and the counter service restaurant that we had eaten at lunch the day before or whatever was closed already. The buffet was closed already in the park. I mean, so it's no wonder the park closes at 9, because by 6 o'clock, a lot of people are leaving. The only people are there are people in line for Crush
or Ratatouille.
Or Ratatouille, you know. But so that was kind of disappointing. Not such a great food offering in the studios. But, you know, in terms of theming anyway, and the food was pretty good at Disneyland Paris in the theme parks. And the Disney Village, again, we had, there's a kind of a knights and old England style restaurant that we'd eaten in years ago, and it was pretty good. They have a Wild West like cowboy show. So I think it's a lot like medieval times where there's cowboys and you have cheering sections. And, and Mickey Mouse makes an appearance to sort of pump up the volume in terms of Disney and all that. And, you know, I'm sure it's not cheap. Right. They do have a restaurant where you can do the character meals. Mm-hmm. So if the characters with Mickey and all those guys is important, they do have that in the Disney Village as well. Big long lines for that place, so that was very popular.
Okay.
So, you know, food was okay.
Right, right. And then I guess the last was, you know, again, looking back, if you had to choose maybe your top three attraction experiences, what would those top three be?
Okay, well, I, you know, the Ratatouille ride is really the top of the list, and not just because it's unique, but because it is really on par, even if it existed elsewhere. But that's definitely one of them. I would say the Big Thunder Mountain there, even if you've ridden Big Thunder before, you've never ridden it if you haven't ridden this one. Really so much better. And then, you know, pick your favorite. You know, a really cool Haunted Mansion, a really cool Space Mountain, some cool attractions like, you know, Tower of Terror and Rock and Roller Coaster. That, you know, if you haven't ridden them, especially if you're coming from Disneyland and you haven't ridden the Rock and Roller Coaster, it's a great thing. And I really do like the Cinemagique show there. I think it does a much better job of sort of highlighting the Hollywood vibe than anything else I've seen in any of the other parks. And so, maybe not the most thrilling or, you know, the most points on paper, but I did enjoy it.
All right. Well, you know, anything that you feel like it's important that people should know about Disneyland Paris that we haven't talked about?
Well, one thing I want to mention is they do have a photo pass system, and it was something we had thought about because we had a real good experience at Disneyland with the Photo Pass Plus, where you can get the on-ride photos plus whatever your other photo pass photos are, including the digital versions. And we had thought about it, and when I got to the park, it was sort of not convenient, and by the time I thought about it again, we'd already gotten some ride, you know, past the ride photos and things like that. But it actually turned out all right because they do not have PhotoPass photographers in all the sort of usual e-ticket photo locations like the castle or whatever. They have, you can get the on-ride photos, and if you go to a meet and character meet and greet, you can get photos there. Or if you go to the hotel, they the hotels have a character meet and greet at certain points during the mornings. And so in the Sequoia Lodge, there was a little place where it was like a little cutout set that looked like, you know, something from Bambi, and we saw Pluto there several times during our trip. Okay. And they would have the photo pass people there, but that's it. And so your opportunity to get a lot of photos from some of these other places and things was kind of limited. And so unless you're hardcore into the photo, like the character meet and greets, it may not be a great option.
Huh. So they didn't have the kind of the environmental photos that they tend to have other places,
right?
You know, with the iconic backdrops, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, that is helpful. Thank you. Well, you know, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing. I know that at the very least, Ryan Treichler cannot wait for this show to come out next week, as he's heading to Disneyland Paris, I believe, sometime soon this fall. So thanks so much for coming on and sharing your experience.
Thanks for having me, and au revoir.
One little spark of inspiration is at the heart of all creation. Right at the start of everything that's new, one little spark lights up for you. Oh, hello there. So glad you could come along. I am the Dream Finder. Musical notes, what delightful melodies those will make. I love these flights of fancy, searching the countryside for sounds, colors, ideas, anything that sparks the imagination. A sunbeam, that's a good one. Everything that I can collect can inspire amazing and marvelous new ideas. And you never know what kind of figment you may come up with. Here's my favorite. Two tiny wings, eyes big and yellow, horns of a steer.